On this episode of the InsurTech Geek Podcast, talking about leading insurance for a global tech company with Sasha Sanyal from Microsoft.
The InsurTech Geek Podcast, powered by JB Knowledge, is all about technology that's transforming and disrupting the insurance world. We'll be interviewing guests and doing deep dives into specific tech we see changing the industry. We're taking you on a journey through insurance tech, so enjoy the ride and geek out.
And we are back with another episode. My illustrious co-host, Rob Galbraith. Rob, how's it going today?
It's going. Definitely the middle of summer, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's warmer temperatures and warmer months, and kids are out of school, and they're busier than when they're in school somehow. Not sure how that works, but certainly is how it works with us. Glad to be in the summertime. Glad to be on the InsurTech Geek with you, Rob. And we have a special guest from New Jersey. I believe you're in New Jersey right now. Sasha Sanyal. Sasha, how are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. And yes, I am in Summit, New Jersey, and the weather is fantastic here for a change.
Yeah, it's great. I'm up in Michigan, Rob's home native territory. I'm here in the summers usually, and weather's delightful. High of 78 today, so it's really nice. So glad to have you on. We're gonna talk about tech. We're gonna talk about Microsoft. We're gonna talk about insurance. We're gonna talk about all those things. But first, I want to talk about you and your background. I want to kind of deep dive on what led you here, because you've had a really great career, first in consulting, and then on through global relationship management. Quality transformation leader at Genpact. You were a global leader of diversity, equity, inclusion, and corporate social responsibility at Genpact. You also were the global business leader for insurance at Genpact. So you've had some really neat positions at EY, EXL, Genpact. And now, for the last year plus, you've been the global head of insurance for one of the largest technology companies in the world, one that I am extremely connected to, I should point out. I've been writing code with Microsoft tools for the last 30 plus years.
Well, that's fantastic.
I started writing code when I was 11 and really started using MS-DOS and batch file programming and at the edit function and everything else and a long, long time ago in the early 90s. And when I started this business in 2001, we have built all of our products off of the Microsoft tech stack and are currently a pretty heavy Azure client, .NET user. You name it, we're very, very intimately involved. So it's good to have someone from a company I am so fond of and that we will talk all about technology with. But let's talk about you. Where were you born and raised, and what did you want to be when you were a kid?
So I was born and raised in India. I was the daughter of an engineer. He was a mechanical engineer, and so I spent a lot of time wanting to do civil or mechanical engineering. My mom would remind me how I would take everything, every piece of electronic I found, and take it apart, and then very rarely was I able to put it back together. So there were many toasters that were acquired in our house. I went on to study computer engineering because at that point in time, that was what, and I'm going to date myself by saying that, but that is what everybody was studying. This was before much of what exists now. So we used to actually write HTTP when we were building websites and things of that nature. So I've had a long love for technology. It's been my path for a long, long time. Started my career in IT consulting, but then meandered my way through a bunch of different things, and financial services just became a bit of a second love, I would say.
So, Sasha, you share a common background and personal history with your CEO, Satya. I'm a huge fan of his because he's an engineer's CEO. He's a builder. He's an operator. He made Microsoft geeky and techie again. And you know, you as well have a pretty great background in technology and consulting, and you really kind of worked through a lot of really great companies. What was kind of your career goal, and what has it really evolved into?
So it's one of the things I say to people. I never really had a specific career goal. You know, I think planning 20 years in the future is just not something you can do, because you never know what's going to come your way, right? So I started out in consulting. When I left college, the question was, do I want to do something more techie or do I want to do a little bit more people oriented? And while I loved the tech, I really wanted to help people implement tech. So I got into IT consulting, which was fantastic. Did a couple of stints where we were doing startups within Ernst & Young, actually, where we started the India practice, for example, and a bunch of other things like that. So I just had this desire to do things that were completely unstructured, new, you know, kind of figuring things out. And then EXL actually was started by the CEO of, at that time, EY India Consulting. Did that for about 4 years. I was the first employee. Great fun. Again, putting structure into a lot of unstructured stuff. Did that for a bit, as I said, and then I moved to what was at that time GE, which got spun out and became Genpact. Even there, it was more about taking what we had built for GE to an external set of clients. And that really became my role, which is how do I take what we're doing for GE Capital internally and take it to a bunch of other financial services organizations and grow really what became our global client base. Was at Genpact for almost 20 years and had a bunch of different roles, and mostly because I tend to get bored after a point in time. So fortunately, they managed to find interesting things for me to do, most of which were just problems that I needed to and wanted to solve. 20 years in, Microsoft came calling. The big pivot, and I was the first person in this role at Microsoft. So 18 months in, I'm still kind of defining, figuring out what it is that we want to do. But really, the big thesis is that Microsoft is a tech and product company, and that is never going to change. We will always be tech and product focused. But how do we take our tech stack, which I believe is amongst the best in the world, and solve industry problems? So how do I actually take the things that we have and the things that we have built, and instead of selling technology to the CIO, talk to the COO of insurance companies or the chief actuaries or to the underwriting officer to really build stuff for the insurance industry. And that's really been what I've been working on for the last 18 months. So a variety of different ways. Not everything will be first-party builds because, again, Microsoft's not going to go in and build really big insurance industry solutions because there are enough people who are doing that. But how do we lean into the ones that are the biggest problems? How do we leverage our very large network of partners to build things which really solve big industry problems? So that's a bit of what I'm doing now. So a long-winded answer to where I am now and how we got here.
What was the initial attraction at Genpact to stepping in 2017 to insurance? Like, what was the thing about it that went, man, I want to do this? Because now you're neck deep now, right? I mean, you're 6 years in and you're really involved. So, I mean, you're leading insurance at one of the largest technology companies on the planet. So, what led to insurance? Was it just a, hey, that sounds interesting. It's something new. You said you get bored easy. Like, what was the initial desire there?
It was all insurance. EXL, our client base was completely insurance. We were actually owned by an insurance company, Conseco, for a point in time. So I got very familiar with operating processes and technology in insurance. I stepped into Genpact to sell to insurance companies. So that was really my background. My background was understanding operations and processes and insurance. In about 2007, I moved out of financial services for a period of time, almost 10 years. And that was more because, you know, there were a set of problems the industry needed to solve, the company needed to solve. And, you know, I just was a problem solver. So insurance was not a by chance. It was something I've been in. It was something I had background in. So it was almost like a homecoming for me, coming back into insurance. And I knew it well enough. I had to kind of reprise myself of some of what had changed in the last decade, I would say, which oddly was not that much.
a sad indictment on the industry.
But yeah, so I found my way back to it. And, you know, I'm getting deep into it. But by the way, yes, it takes time, but when the industry leans in, they really lean in. And I think they are now amongst the biggest innovators. They're doing the most interesting things. They're leapfrogging many industries around them. But, you know, they do have to be there. I mean, at the end of the day, it's an industry that is about risk, right? So they do have a tendency to be a little bit risk averse. Or we have a tendency to be a little bit risk averse, I would say.
Yes. Well, when you calculate risk for a living and you know what it all is, then it makes you a little gun shy.
Exactly. Right?
It's like, well, there's a lot of analogies I won't give. Rob, what do you have?
Yeah, Sasha, I'm curious your perspective on this. So, I've worked at leading insurance companies in the past, carriers, and they have used Microsoft products for years, right? Definitely Windows, Office Space. And it's always struck me over time and probably like underappreciated and certainly under-discussed the impact that their long-term collaboration with Microsoft has had. Microsoft account executives, senior executives, others would visit on a regular basis with the, CIO, CTO, and others, have regular conversations and just be partners with their clients in terms of moving forward. And I particularly think about things like cloud migration with Azure and being able to adopt, different flavors of AI and things like that. So certainly there's always been this long-term presence with a number of major carriers and traditional firms. I think of Microsoft a little bit less in the startup space. Mm-hmm. I could absolutely be wrong about that. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about the clients that you work with. Are they more the large traditional firms or do they run the gamut? And then what are the biggest concerns that they have that you're kind of working with them today on?
So they run the gamut, just to be clear. They are they range from some of the largest carriers in the world to some of the smallest insurtechs and ISVs in the world, right? So I have one, I have probably every one of the large life P&C specialty carriers. I mean, you name them and I probably work with them. But then I have these smaller companies who are trying to solve very specific problems, right? So for example, we work with a company called Indico Data. They're just going into Series B. They're focused on using large language models and creating audit trail to fix very specific insurance problems, right? There's a company I work with that's focused on payments in the insurance space. I mean, if you think about insurance, you pay premiums, you pay claims. So it's a set of payment transactions, right? Some are collected and some are made. So we work with companies that do both these things because part of what I want to do is introduce the Indicos of the world to the Chubbs of the world, right? So that they can actually come together and solve problems for the large carriers. When we talk to the larger carriers, there's a different set of things that we're talking to them about now. So it's no longer just about, can we bring you high performance compute or can you buy more teams or can you blah, 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 whatever that might be. But it's more about how do I make your call center agents more effective? How do I make sure that they cross sell more effectively? How do I make sure that you embed cyber insurance into every transaction that you are selling? You know, things of that nature. So now I think the conversations we have are much more outcome-based, revenue-generating insurance industry conversations as opposed to selling them a set of technology problem solutions, right? So I think that is the pivot that we've been trying to make at Microsoft, and that's really what my focus has been. Every time I go to a conference, one of the things I do, Rob, is say, how many of you know that Microsoft has an insurance practice, and you'll have, one hand from my team raise up. And I'm like, no, if you're in my team, you can't raise your hand. But people don't know. So a big part of my job is also making sure that they understand, that they see me at the InsurTech conferences, that I speak to thought leaders such as yourself and let them know what we're doing in the industry. So it's, some of those things.
What's in it for Microsoft? I mean, you guys obviously make money by pushing licenses and subscriptions, right? Like you connect solution providers with people who consume solutions. You make a lot of money off of our platform fees for Azure. You make a lot of money off of us for all the individual seat licenses for, Office and Windows and all the tooling. And so I understand how Microsoft makes money. Especially in the Azure platform, you make oodles of money by people using all of your intrinsic tools and all of your hosting services and all of your data products and then, Power BI utilization. Is the end game for Microsoft making sure that the solution provider is paired with the solution consumer and that everybody's ideally in your ecosystem and your framework. Like Satya has really been amazing about embracing the open source community and bringing tooling in that we've been using for a long time and kind of incorporating it into the Microsoft ecosystem. So I'm just trying to understand what the strategy and long play is that you can talk about. So, with insurance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think and Microsoft will always be a product-focused company. That's where we do most of our innovation and our biggest innovations, right? So that is never going to change. But it's about having a seat at the table. So if you think about it, and I'll draw a parallel from my last company to when I joined Microsoft, right? So when, because we ran deep business processes, I had access to everybody at the C-suite, right? When I first joined Microsoft, most of the people that we were engaging with were CIOs. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's absolutely fantastic. But you're not solving the big problems and you're not sitting at the table when the big problems need to be solved. You are called upon when technology needs to be provided, right? And the relevance and the seat at the table is completely different. So even a smaller company, I mean, we were 4 billion revenue, 7 billion market cap, nothing, a drop in the ocean. But because of how deeply embedded we were in the business processes, we had a seat at the table. And that's what Microsoft is doing now. So if you look at the stuff that we're doing with generative AI, if you look at the stuff we're doing in healthcare and insurance with generative AI, they're not, generative AI in itself is a technology, right? But really, you have to solve big industry problems. And that is what we're doing as an organization in general, right? So in banking, how do you solve the biggest industry problems? In retail, how do you solve the biggest industry problems? In insurance, how do you solve the biggest industry problems? And what will come along will always be our technology solutions, right? So again, another example, when you're trying to build out anything using generative AI, you need to have a data layer in place, right? So think about it. That data layer will be built on our high-performance compute. So even though at the end of the day, at the top of the stack is an industry problem you're solving, what you're pulling along is our tech stack, right? So it's a very virtuous cycle at the end of the day. It allows us a seat at the table. It allows us to solve the big problems that people are thinking about. And it allows us to sell more technology.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it allows you to be part of, you know, a bigger part of the entire ecosystem. Yeah, I mean, like that's... What I've seen, like writing software, building technology is so different than when I started in 1991. There, like we write like 80 to 90% less code than we did back then. And if you look at solutions like GitHub, you know,
Copilot,
like it's major. It's really major. And your company is at the center of the discussion around AI because of your 49% investment, I believe.
In
ChatGPT and OpenAI, which is the hottest topic of the day. And we use ChatGPT every freaking day now. Every day. We use ChatGPT to write code. We use ChatGPT to write marketing literature. We use ChatGPT to compose. I mean, it is crazy, you know, what we're using this for. Y'all are at the center of this discussion. I mean, you're providing the tooling that is... What's scary to me is how fast the software development process moves now because mm-hmm. of this, because we, before we're able to take a little more time to be intentional about things and to think through it. And now it's like, you can design, develop, deploy, code, execute. The cycles are super fast, like right. Almost too fast. And the versions are coming too fast and it's so hard to get our hands around things. So yeah. I don't have a question there. I just think that it's an interesting time, and Microsoft's right at the center of that discussion. Rob, what do you have?
But let me just one thing on that, right? So one of the unintended consequences of code generation, and again, this is part of the conversations we have, right? So you assume code generation is what it'll be used for most, right? But actually the people that are loving this are the QA or the managers, because it goes in and it looks at your code, a code that's been generated by a level one developer, and it tells you this is wrong, this is right, this semantic, you know, the syntax is not the right, you know. So it's actually helping the QA folks as an unintended consequence, because it almost goes in and corrects your code. So forget the generation, it's also another level of what we didn't assume was going to happen, which I find quite fascinating, actually.
Yeah, Sasha, I want to piggyback. You know, generative AI, I think, is a great topic. And we talked about the speed and you know, how quickly these technologies are adopting and the different use cases. You know, I'm curious your perspective on this, because a lot of companies, particularly, again, maybe some of the more traditional players, like one of the reasons they partner with Microsoft is just the inherent trust they have in Microsoft vis-a-vis another company, another technology that they're worried are going to have something's going to break, something's going to be, you know, exposed to a data hack or leak or, you know, security threat or just not work or kludge up, right, some other part. I mean, we're talking about very, very complex systems. And so that stability and that level of trust is so important to them, but it can also cause paralysis, right, in terms of people not wanting to innovate, people not wanting to move forward. And we're seeing the pace of changes is even accelerating. So, you know, how do you at Microsoft kind of work with clients to kind of give them that reassurance? On the one hand, right, you're not going to break something, you're still going to be able to, you know, pay claims and meet all your regulatory obligations and things like that. But at the same time, help accelerating the pace of innovation with these partners.
So I'll answer that in a few different ways. One, I think the biggest number of conversations we're having right now with insurance carriers, friends of ours, clients of ours, and not, is what is generative AI? What does it mean for us? What are the biggest use cases and how do we get started, right? So I think those are the four questions I'm answering on a daily basis and my team is answering on a daily basis for every size scale of insurer across the globe. So lots of conversation, right? The second thing we always say to them is the concern that they have is, are you going to use our information and data to learn? And does that mean our information and data becomes public? Right? Not true at all, because whatever is in your Azure instance is in your Azure instance, and you will use that only to learn your specific use cases, right? It's never going to go out into the public domain. What OpenAI has used is a completely different set of data. That is not what your data is going to be. The third thing is Microsoft has always been known for its security stack, right? So we are the ones who started the conversation around zero trust. So I think that gives them a sense of comfort to come in and talk to us and experiment with us. We have these SWAT teams across the globe who are now helping every one of our clients and some who are not figure out what those two or three things are that they should go in and figure out. And the biggest thing we say is what will separate the innovators from the laggards is quick experimentation. So this is not the traditional, and James, you talked about this, the scale at which experimentation and adoption has actually been taken on for this is beyond anything else ever, any kind of technology in the world. So you cannot say, I will stand up a team in 12 months and I will invest and I will start to think about use cases. It'll have passed by then. You got to do it now. You got to do it tomorrow. You get your people on board. You have to move quickly. So I think the biggest advice that we give to all of our clients is start quickly, fail fast. And, you know, again, it's not easy to do necessarily. So sometimes they have to go outside of what their natural culture is. Again, insurance being fairly risk averse. Get outside of your natural culture and go out and experiment. Do it quickly, because the more you learn, the more you will actually evolve. And it will separate the innovators from the laggards very, very quickly.
Pace of innovation, the time period for innovation, the cycle, like how long this cycle takes, each iteration, you know, all of that has a big impact on our ability to really stay relevant. I mean, it's something I think making all tech companies really nervous right now. You know, we've spent 22 years building custom software for people. And the reality is we're going to write a lot less code than we did in the past. Mm. And you know, so you've got to really think about your entire business model and how that changes. And so I think that's really important for the solution providers, because it's upending our world to change the paradigm that we've got. Mm. You've written some interesting blog posts on the impact of AI and generative AI. I know a lot of use cases for ChatGPT and for Copilot, and because we use them, right? I mean, I'm actually in it. So Tell me though, give me like a really cool, obscure use case, or maybe not obscure, but something maybe people hadn't thought of that you think that all the AI tool sets, because Microsoft is investing in a large number of AI tool sets, not just ChatGPT. Can you give me some really cool insurance use cases that you see coming down the pipe?
Yeah. So It's not cool or obscure, unfortunately. Most of it is the traditional stuff, right? So if you think about insurance, what do? We underwrite risk. We look at lots and lots and lots of documents, right? It's probably the most data and document intensive industry in the world. And what does generative AI do? It helps you look at structured, unstructured documents and generate a set of decisions. But one has to be super, super careful because you don't want to use it for decision-making, right? So you don't want to use it for underwriting. You don't want to use it for claims adjudication. You want it to provide you advice, right? So those are all the standard things, using it as an underwriting assistant, using it to do call transcriptions for claims. But I think some of the cooler and more interesting use cases are just call center co-pilots, for example, right? So how much of your work is policyholder servicing? We've been talking about things like chatbots forever. We've been talking about things like sentiment analysis forever. How can we use generative AI to read the sentiment and suggest the next best course of action? Sounds like a fairly simple traditional thing, but if you think about where our cost bases lie in the insurance industry, policyholder servicing is probably one of the largest cost bases, right? So that could be one of those. And that is one of the ones where we're experimenting with the most. Think about empowering your brokers, right? What is a broker? A broker is someone who can provide you advice. If you can quickly look at a whole bunch of context about a person who wants to buy something and say, hey, based on A, B, C, D, E, which is really what they do, but all of a sudden you have this technology tool that allows you to do that and shorten the cycle time. In the world we're in, a shorter cycle time from quote to bind means getting that additional client on board or losing that client, right? So these are all things that become ways in which they become more effective. Insurance becomes more effective. Code generation, you talked about that. Code generation is a massive part. When you have ancient code and we have lots of legacy systems.
Tons and insurance, tons and tons and tons of legacy code. There
you go. That got you excited. So, you know, imagine having technology that allows you, you know, I mean, I heard a couple of years ago that COBOL is becoming cool again, which is really scary because that's what I learned 30 years ago in college. But now you have a technology solution that allows you to debug those kinds of things, right? So a lot of this stuff, it's not about super cool, you know, it'll do A, B, C, D, E. It's really about taking the stuff that is very traditional, very transactional, making it easier, making it more predictable, making it more auditable, and just making it more frictionless, which is something that will help the entire industry as a whole.
Yeah, Sasha, I'm laughing at the COBOL because I know in the past, you know, we would take university graduates that had been programming in Java in the past and Python, things like that, and then like training them on COBOL. And they're like, what? Why are you, you know? So, yeah, they'll be very happy to not have to do that. So I'm curious, and just to kind of wrap up, like, what are you seeing from a global perspective? You know, one of the unique positions that you have, you know, with the numerous clients that you have all around the world, right, is you have this opportunity to kind of benchmark to see best practices. And I know things like, you know, privacy standards, regulation, you know, Asia is a very different environment than, say, Europe, mm-hmm. right? In the US, we tend to be kind of in the middle, I would say, right, from regulating AI and things like that. So what are you seeing, I guess, across different markets? And, you know, are there any maybe leading use cases or areas that you are pretty excited about, kind of seeing how the future will develop in 5 or 10 years?
So, and you know, this is beyond AI, right? So I think one of the cool things about Microsoft is that we have a very, very global client base, as you mentioned. So one of the things that I'm able to do is connect the dots between things that are happening in an Asia and a Latin America and talk to my clients in, say, Canada and the US, for example, right? So Asia, for example, is way ahead in linking health and life, right? So wearables data into life insurance and more predictive and proactive management of your health. Asia is much, much further ahead, right? The Ping Ans of the world and the things that they're doing, and now, you know, the AIAs of the world and the things that they're doing. I take that to my clients in Canada who are now just starting to do some of that stuff, right? Latin America is probably amongst the foremost when it comes to embedded insurance, right? They embed insurance in every step of the value chain. How do I take some of those learnings and start to talk to my European clients about that, right? How do I make those dots connect? Open insurance, for example, one of the things that we're hearing more and more about, right? Canada is further ahead. Europe is further ahead. Regulators are insisting that many more people do that and make certain data public, right? Now, my insurance companies in Canada are like, oh, my God, how are we going to deal with that? Well, guess what? So-and-so has done that. So I think that's the unique position Microsoft sits in. Having a vantage point across the globe and being able to connect dots on things that are happening and connect people on things that are happening, I think that's what really puts us in a very unique position. And I don't think it's something we have really capitalized on for our clients prior to this. And it's something that we're starting to do a lot more of.
Awesome. Well, we are at time, but I want to thank you so much for your discussion. I'm so excited about what Microsoft is doing. And certainly the technologies you're investing in are radically changing the entire planet. I'm sure a lot of our listeners on the show have seen the graphs of path to a billion users and have seen that OpenAI hit it way faster than anybody else. And then if you look at the adoption curve of Microsoft tooling like Copilot and many, many other tools, the adoption times are way faster than we've ever seen technology be adopted. It's either going to be really, really good for all of us or really bad, and Skynet is coming and Terminator will be here to crush our skulls into the ground with their robot feet. But one or the other, it is a exciting unknown. As always, we appreciate what Microsoft is doing, and I know I do. And thank you for the time you've spent to talk to us about this today.
Not at all. Thank you for having me, and have a wonderful day.
Yes, and thank you out there, listener land, to listening to another episode. This is Sasha Sanyal from Microsoft of the InsurTech Geek Podcast. See you next time.
The InsurTech Geek Podcast, powered by JB Knowledge, jbknowledge.com. It's all about technology that's transforming and disrupting the insurance world. I've been your host, James Benham. That's jamesbenham.com, with co-host Rob Galbraith at endofinsurance.com. And thank you for joining us today. Look forward to talking with you soon. We're taking you on a journey through insurance tech, so enjoy the ride and geek out.